Listening test. Task 1. You are going to listen to Jack, a teaching assistant, or TA, who spent 2020 to 2022 in Tyrol. First, you will have 45 seconds to study the task below. Then you will hear the recording twice. While listening, choose the correct answer, A, B, C, or D, for each question, 1 to 8. Put a cross in the correct box on the answer sheet. The first one, 0, has been done for you. After the second listening, you will have 45 seconds to check your answers.
I'm 24 years old. When I came here, I was 22. And so living in Reutte for the first year was rather difficult for me. I like to be around a lot of people, especially people my age who are in similar situations. And in Reutte, that was very hard to find. I made a friend who was 20 years old, but that's the closest that that came to my age. And so it was also in the middle of the pandemic. Everything was closed. No bars were open, so it was incredibly hard to meet new people. I often spent my time with my coworkers who were over 40 years old. And while they were very nice and incredibly accommodating and generous to me, there was still something missing from my social life, which is the relatability that you get hanging around with others your age in similar situations. Whether they're studying, I had just gotten out of school, so I wasn't far removed from that, but also other teaching assistants. And there are plenty of other teaching assistants doing the same thing that I was doing in Innsbruck. And whenever I went to Innsbruck to see them, I always got a kind of pleasure that I couldn't get hanging out with my 40-year-old coworkers, 40 and up. And so there were many months during the winter when the pandemic was at its peak and the lockdown, well, at its peak, but the lockdowns were at their peak, that I was at home almost every day, didn't do anything. I was, you know, spending a lot of time teaching myself to learn languages. But I got very lonely sometimes. And in Innsbruck, however, when I moved to Innsbruck, things really changed. And I was able to experience a lot more culture, with a lot of museums and the Leokino films, dance music clubs, concerts, bars. There were plenty of other teaching assistants that I've met over my time here. And so I've found much more of a community that I identify with in Innsbruck than in Reutte. And as far as teaching goes, however, the experience I had in Reutte was much more personal. That's the one thing I would say I miss about Reutte, is that in Reutte, I was being invited almost every single week to come over for coffee after school or for dinners, to go on hikes with my teachers. I saw every class every single week or every other week, and I got to know my students in a way that I cannot in Innsbruck at the HTL because of the way I'm scheduled and because of the way I think city life is, in a way that city life is a lot more busy than this rural life, and people seem to be a bit more caught up in all the activities that a city can provide. Sometimes it can be overwhelming, I think. And so you have school, maybe you have certain classes you want to take afterwards, or you're going to certain cultural events. that you don't have as much time to, you know, spend with the TA than maybe you'd like to. I'm 24 years old. When I came here, I was 22. And so living in Reutte for the first year was rather difficult for me. I like to be around a lot of people, especially people my age who are in similar situations. And in Reutte, that was very hard to find. I made a friend who was 20 years old, but that's the closest that that came to my age. And so it was also in the middle of the pandemic. Everything was closed. No bars were open, so it was incredibly hard to meet new people. I often spent my time with my coworkers who were over 40 years old. And while they were very nice and incredibly accommodating and generous to me, there was still something missing from my social life, which is the relatability that you get hanging around with others your age in similar situations. Whether they're studying, I had just gotten out of school, so I wasn't far removed from that, but also other teaching assistants. And there are plenty of other teaching assistants doing the same thing that I was doing in Innsbruck. And whenever I went to Innsbruck to see them, I always got a kind of pleasure that I couldn't get hanging out with my 40-year-old coworkers, 40 and up. And so there were many months during the winter when the pandemic was at its peak and the lockdown, well, at its peak, but the lockdowns were at their peak, that I was at home almost every day, didn't do anything. I was, you know, spending a lot of time teaching myself to learn languages, but I got very lonely sometimes. And in Innsbruck, however, when I moved to Innsbruck, things really changed. And I was able to experience a lot more culture, with a lot of museums and the Leokino films, dance music clubs, concerts, bars. There were plenty of other teaching assistants that I've met over my time here. And so I've found much more of a community that I identify with in Innsbruck than in Reutte. And as far as teaching goes, however, the experience I had in Reutte was much more personal. That's the one thing I would say I miss about Reutte, is that in Reutte, I was being invited almost every single week to come over for coffee after school or for dinners, to go on hikes with my teachers. I saw every class every single week or every other week, and I got to know my students in a way that I like cannot in Innsbruck at the HTL, because of the way I'm scheduled and because of the way I think city life is, in a way that city life is a lot more busy than this rural life, and people seem to be a bit more caught up in all the activities that a city can provide. Sometimes it can be overwhelming, I think. And so you have school, maybe you have certain classes you want to take afterwards, or you're going to certain cultural events that you don't have as much time to, you know, spend with the TA than maybe you'd like to.
Task 2. You are going to listen to a report from 2015 on how a drought, which means a shortage of water, affects teenagers such as Jenny. First, you will have 45 seconds to study the task below. Then you will hear the recording twice. While listening, answer the questions 1 to 8 using a maximum of 4 words. Write your answers in the spaces provided on the answer sheet. The first one, 0, has been done for you. After the second listening, you will have 45 seconds to check your answers.
California's drought has gone on long enough that California teenagers hardly recall when it was otherwise. You know, you're a teenager, you've only been paying attention to the wider world for a few years, and there you are in the middle of a drought that's gone on for 3 years, the worst in California history. Savannah Robinson of Youth Radio has more.
A shower is my favorite part of the day. It helps me face school in the morning or relax in the evening. Even so, I know that long showers are a luxury that we can't really afford anymore. So I decided to time myself to see how long I was taking. With new restrictions mandated by Governor Jerry Brown, a recommended shower is 5 minutes now. So that was my shower. I timed it on my iPhone. That was about 13 minutes, so that was a really long shower, even for me, and I definitely need to do better. I'm 17 years old, and for all of my teenage years, my state has been short on water. It's not just shower water we have to think about. Recently, we had an unexpected change in our drinking water.
I am looking at 2 cups in front of me. One says A, one says B.
That's Soraya Shockley. And along with our friends Amber Lee and Diana Martin, we conducted a little experiment when we first noticed a difference in the water.
One cup is filled with water from the tap, and the other one is from a water bottle.
To help you understand, tap water in Oakland has typically been as good as any bottled water you could buy in the store. You could barely tell the difference between the two. When my friends tasted the bottled water, they all pretty much said the same thing.
I don't really taste anything.
But when it came to the water from the tap,
it tastes like it's something in B that's not in A.
It doesn't taste as clean.
Okay, yeah, B tastes weird.
So what changed? Normally, our tap water comes from the bottom of our reservoir. Clean, fresh, cold water, which is a key element for salmon to spawn. And with water so limited, the water district decided it needed to preserve that cold water for the salmon. So at the end of March, it started taking water from a higher part of the reservoir instead, where it's warmer. And that made a big difference.
We heard from our customers loud and clear.
That's Abby Figueroa. She's a spokesperson for our local water district. She says the warm water that we were left with was more susceptible to algae blooms.
Even though the algae is filtered out at our treatment plants, it does leave behind a different taste and odor profile.
Not exactly what we're used to here in the San Francisco East Bay. Figueroa says that so many customers complained, they recently reverted back to using water from the bottom of the reservoir. But it's a temporary solution.
We've gone back to the drawing board and looked at, are there any other options? There aren't many, though. We're no longer in a normal situation with our water supply.
Adults may have a hard time adjusting to the change, but for teens like me who grew up with the drought, this is our new normal. Soraya Shockley again.
I want to be able to live in California that's a mixture of desert and this beautiful, like, lush evergreen space, but, you know.
California's drought has gone on long enough that California teenagers hardly recall when it was otherwise. You know, you're a teenager, you've only been paying attention to the wider world for a few years, And there you are in the middle of a drought that's gone on for 3 years, the worst in California history. Savannah Robinson of Youth Radio has more.
A shower is my favorite part of the day. It helps me face school in the morning or relax in the evening. Even so, I know that long showers are a luxury that we can't really afford anymore. So I decided to time myself to see how long I was taking. With new restrictions mandated by Governor Jerry Brown, a recommended shower is 5 minutes now. So that was my shower. I timed it on my iPhone. That was about 13 minutes, so that was a really long shower, even for me, and I definitely need to do better. I'm 17 years old, and for all of my teenage years, my state has been short on water. It's not just shower water we have to think about. Recently, we had an unexpected change in our drinking water.
I am looking at two cups in front of me. One says A, one says B.
That's Saraya Shockley. And along with our friends Amber Lee and Diana Martin, we conducted a little experiment when we first noticed a difference in the water.
One cup is filled with water from the tap, and the other one is from a water bottle.
To help you understand, tap water in Oakland has typically been as good as any bottled water you could buy in the store. You could barely tell the difference between the two. When my friends tasted the bottled water, they all pretty much said the same thing.
I don't really taste anything.
But when it came to the water from the tap,
it tastes like it's something in B that's not in A.
It doesn't taste as clean.
Okay, yeah, B tastes weird.
So what changed? Normally, our tap water comes from the bottom of our reservoir. Clean, fresh, cold water, which is a key element for salmon to spawn. And with water so limited, the water district decided it needed to preserve that cold water for the salmon. So at the end of March, it started taking water from a higher part of the reservoir instead, where it's warmer. And that made a big difference.
We heard from our customers loud and clear.
That's Abby Figueroa. She's a spokesperson for our local water district. She says the warm water that we were left with was more susceptible to algae blooms.
Even though the algae is filtered out at our treatment plants, it does leave behind a different taste and odor profile.
Not exactly what we're used to here in the San Francisco East Bay. Figueroa says that so many customers complained, they recently reverted back to using water from the bottom of the reservoir. But it's a temporary solution.
We've gone back to the drawing board and looked at, are there any other options? There aren't many, though. We're no longer in a normal situation with our water supply.
Adults may have a hard time adjusting to the change, but for teens like me who grew up with the drought, this is our new normal. Saraya Shockley again.
I want to be able to live in California. That's a mixture of desert and this beautiful, like, lush evergreen space, but, you know.
Task 3. You are going to listen to Anne, who had not yet been to Vienna. First, you will have 45 seconds to study the task below. Then you will hear the recording twice. While listening, match the beginnings of the sentences 1 to 9 with the sentence endings A to L. There are two sentence endings that you should not use. Write your answers in the boxes provided on the answer sheet. The first one, 0, has been done for you. After the second listening, you will have 45 seconds to check your answers.
So it was my first time in Vienna. I was new to the city and I had come for a meeting at the new university campus. And I was staying in a hotel near the Prater, which is a huge park. And I was soon to find out just exactly how huge it is. Anyway, my meeting was scheduled for 9 o'clock, so I thought, well, time after breakfast to go for a walk. It was a beautiful morning, fresh, sunny, lovely. And so I set off. And first I walked through the fairground part of the Prater, which is very interesting because it's so old-fashioned. It must be over 100 years old. So then I moved into the actual park and it was very quiet. There were a few dog walkers out, a few runners, but otherwise I had the place to myself and I walked along in the sunshine enjoying myself. And then I realised that it was probably time that I should be getting across to the campus for my meeting. And I looked around and I had no idea where I was. I couldn't see any landmarks. I couldn't see the hotel. I couldn't even see the fairground I had walked through. So better ask somebody, I thought. Don't ask me why I didn't use Google Maps right away. It would have been a better idea. And I saw a man coming towards me with a dog. And I thought, here is the ideal person. He's obviously a local here. If he's out walking a dog, how wrong can you be? He was Irish. I spoke to him in German and he answered with a very strong Irish accent with as few words of German that he didn't speak German. And when he discovered that I was from England, he was very keen to tell me about his family that lived in England. But I was very keen by this time to get to my meeting because time was getting on and I was going to be late if I didn't hurry up. So I said goodbye and went on a bit further. I saw a young woman. I thought, this is ideal. She looks like a student. She will know where the university campus is. So I asked in German again. She was American, but she knew vaguely where the campus was. She waved her hand in the general direction and off I went in that direction. So, and then I saw a man taking parcels out of a post van and I thought, well, if he doesn't know where the university campus is, nobody does. And I went up and I asked him in German and he looked at me with big eyes and just shook his head. And then I asked a lady who gave me very precise directions and within 10 minutes or so, I was at the university campus. I don't like being late for things, so I was very hot and a little bit panicky. And I came into the meeting and I apologised for being late and explained why I was late. And the people looked at me as if, you know, what a very strange thing to get lost in the Prater. So it was my first time in Vienna. I was new to the city and I had come for a meeting at the new university campus and I was staying in a hotel near the Prater, which is a huge park, and I was soon to find out just exactly how huge it is. Anyway, my meeting was scheduled for 9 o'clock, so I thought, well, time after breakfast to go for a walk. It was a beautiful morning, fresh, sunny, lovely. And so I set off. And first I walked through the fairground part of the Prater, which is very interesting because it's so old-fashioned. It must be over 100 years old. So then I moved into the actual park and it was very quiet. There were a few dog walkers out, a few runners, but otherwise I had the place to myself and I walked along in the sunshine enjoying myself. And then I realised that it was probably time that I should be getting across to the campus for my meeting. And I looked around and I had no idea where I was. I couldn't see any landmarks. I couldn't see the hotel. I couldn't even see the fairground I had walked through. So better ask somebody, I thought. Don't ask me why I didn't use Google Maps right away. It would have been a better idea. And I saw a man coming toward me with a dog. And I thought, here is the ideal person. He's obviously a local here, if he's out walking a dog. How wrong can you be? He was Irish. I spoke to him in German and he answered with a very strong Irish accent, with as few words of German, that he didn't speak German. And when he discovered that I was from England, he was very keen to tell me about his family that lived in England. But I was very keen by this time to get to my meeting because time was getting on and I was going to be late if I didn't hurry up. So I said goodbye and went on a bit further. I saw a young woman. I thought, this is ideal. She looks like a student. She will know where the university campus is. So I asked in German again. She was American, but she knew vaguely where the campus was. She waved her hand in the general direction, and off I went in that direction. So, and then I saw a man taking parcels out of a post van, and I thought, well, if he doesn't know where the university campus is, nobody does. And I went up and I asked him in German, and he looked at me with big eyes and just shook his head. And then I asked a lady who gave me very precise directions, and within 10 minutes or so, I was at the university campus. I don't like being late for things, so I was very hot and a little bit panicky. And I came into the meeting and I apologised for being late and explained why I was late. And the people looked at me as if, you know, what a very strange thing to get lost in the Prater.
Task 4. You are going to listen to Mark, an engineer on a ferry who was involved in the production of a film. First, you will have 45 seconds to study the task below. Then you will hear the recording twice. While listening, choose the correct answer, A, B, C, or D, for each question, 1 to 7. Put a cross in the correct box on the answer sheet. The first one, 0, has been done for you. After the second listening, you will have 45 seconds to check your answers.
In the 1990s, I was the staff chief engineer on the Washington State Ferry Tilikum. The boat was chartered by Warner Brothers Productions to film scenes from the movie Disclosure for 8 days. I was told to just accommodate the film company and do pretty much whatever they wanted for up to 16 hours a day for 8 days. So, the film crew all came aboard. They set up two big, huge generators that cost millions of dollars because they're the most silent generators in the world, just made for film production. They ran big electric cables up topside so they could run all their lights and cameras and equipment. They had trailers for the actors, trailers for costumes, everything that Hollywood uses to film a movie on board the ferry, including trucks from caterers that came from Hollywood with really fabulous foods for everyone. They hired 200 extras. They didn't get to eat the fancy food. They just got extras, sack lunches. The ferry crew got to eat with the production company. So we had the fancy catered food. It was fabulous. The film starred Michael Douglas and Demi Moore. Michael Douglas was in all the ferry boat scenes. And when he came to work in the morning, he had his head down and he went right into his trailer and he wouldn't talk to anybody. And I think he was totally getting into his role for the day. When they decided to shoot a scene, they would shoot it with his stand-in, who looked very much like him, dressed the same as him, and just stood there in the part of the scene he was in, while everyone else in the scene played their parts until they had them down perfect. It would take maybe five practices. And when everything looked perfect, Michael Douglas would come out instead of the stand-in. He would speak his lines, and it was usually one take. Everything was perfect. And so they would break for meals, and we would get really, really fancy meals. So good that I told my wife, I will not be home for 8 days. And we worked about 16 to 18 hours a day, so I just slept on the ferry. I dressed up at their request in my fancy dress uniform, and I tried to get in as many scenes as I could because I wanted to be in the movie. And Warner Brothers paid me, I think, about $900 for scenes I had been in, even though they didn't use them. And Michael Douglas got $8 million up front, so he was a happy camper, but he was very, very serious during the workday. However, at about 10 o'clock at night, we quit shooting, and he would just come out of his trailer, and he was the nicest, most friendly guy. He shook everyone's hand, wanted to know who you were, what you did, and just a super nice guy. In the 1990s, I was the staff chief engineer on the Washington State Ferry Tillicum. The boat was chartered by Warner Brothers Productions to film scenes from the movie Disclosure for 8 days. I was told to just accommodate the film company and do pretty much whatever they wanted for up to 16 hours a day for 8 days. So, the film crew all came aboard. They set up two big, huge generators that cost millions of dollars because they're the most silent generators in the world, just made for film production. They ran big electric cables up topside so they could run all their lights and cameras and equipment. They had trailers for the actors, trailers for costumes, everything that Hollywood uses to film a movie on board the ferry, including trucks from caterers that came from Hollywood with really fabulous foods for everyone. They hired 200 extras. They didn't get to eat the fancy food. They just got extras, sack lunches. The ferry crew got to eat with the production company. So we had the fancy catered food. It was fabulous. The film starred Michael Douglas and Demi Moore. Michael Douglas was in all the ferry boat scenes. And when he came to work in the morning, he had his head down and he went right into his trailer and he wouldn't talk to anybody. And I think he was totally getting into his role for the day. When they decided to shoot a scene, they would shoot it with his stand-in, who looked very much like him, dressed the same as him, and just stood there in the part of the scene he was in, while everyone else in the scene played their parts until they had them down perfect. It would take maybe 5 practices. And when everything looked perfect, Michael Douglas would come out instead of the stand-in. He would speak his lines, and it was usually one take. Everything was perfect. And so they would break for meals, and we would get really, really fancy meals. So good that I tell my wife, I will not be home for 8 days. And we worked about 16 to 18 hours a day, so I just slept on the ferry. I dressed up at their request in my fancy dress uniform, and I tried to get in as many scenes as I could because I wanted to be in the movie. And Warner Brothers paid me, I think, about $900 for scenes I had been in, even though they didn't use them. And Michael Douglas got $8 million up front, so he was a happy camper, but he was very, very serious during the workday. However, at about 10 o'clock at night, we quit shooting, and he would just come out of his trailer, and he was the nicest, most friendly guy. He shook everyone's hand, wanted to know who you were, what you did, and just a super nice guy.
This is the end of the listening test.